from the Cyber Hub bunker and studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Good morning, security gang. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Hub podcast. I hope everyone had a good, relaxing weekend. It was a holiday weekend for many. Our Christian viewers celebrated Palm Sunday. We, the Jewish people, celebrated the holiday of Purim, where we dressed up as costumes. It's the Jewish version of Halloween. It was great. It was amazing. And it was a spectacular weekend. But with that being a spectacular weekend, we're back to the reality of cybersecurity practitioners, where the getting away from the office sometimes chases us on a Monday morning as we get ready to kick off our duties as practitioners. So we've got a lot to talk about on this morning's show. Let's go ahead and get right into that. But before we do, please make sure to go check out our Substack, jamesazar.substack.com. Find all the latest and greatest there as well. Exclusive content. Also, find us on your favorite podcast listening platform. Subscribe and tune in there as well. And now, without further ado, join me for a double espresso coffee cup. Cheers, y'all. Let's go ahead and kick off with a team of researchers representing several universities in the U.S. disclosing a side channel attack method that can be used to extract secret encryption keys from systems powered by the Apple CPU. This method has been named GoFetch. It's been described as a microarchitectural side channel attack that allows the extraction of secret keys from constant time cryptographic implementations. These types of attacks would require local access to the targeted system. Now, the reason we talk about this and we kind of look at this is they got to have physical access to the devices, meaning they've got to be able to have access to the laptop, to the iPhone, to the iPad, to whatever it is that are storing these. Now, producing semiconductors, Apple making their M1, M2, M3, they perform amazing. As someone who's an Apple consumer, I can tell you, bar none, they're magnificent. However, Intel, AMD, NVIDIA, and so many others have been doing it for so many years. It's very, very difficult, and we're seeing this happen at the hardware side of the house and at the core brain of the hardware. And this is where this gets a little bit tricky for practitioners, because you look at these threats and you go, okay, so they can actually find a way to create cryptographic operation inputs. It would allow them to infer secret keys, guessing them bits at a time that they're monitoring the behavior. There's a whole bunch of stuff around this. They've managed to demonstrate end-to-end key extraction attacks against several crypto implementations, including OpenSSL, Diffie-Hellman Hellman Key Exchange, GoRSA, and the post-quantum Crystals Kuber and Crystals Dilithium. And again, public key exchange in crypto is probably the most dangerous aspect of encrypting data, because the key is sitting right there with the data, and all it takes is just a little bit of knowledge in a computer to break those apart. The researchers conducted successful GoFetch attacks against the M1, M2, and M3 processors, although only the M1 was that they tested it and believe it does work on M2 and M3 as well. Apple told Security Week that thanks to the research for their collaboration, as the work advances, they're understanding these types of threats and they've established mitigations for those as well. The Fortinet 40 Client Enterprise Management Server is now with a proof of concept exploit for a critical vulnerability. That critical vulnerability is CVE-2023-48788. The security flaws in SQL injection in the DB2 admin server component discovered and reported by the UK National Cybersecurity Center. It impacts 40 client EMS versions 7.0 through 7.0.10 and 7.2 to 7.2.2. And it enables unauthenticated threat actors to gain a remote code execution with system privileges on unpatched servers and low complexity attacks that don't require user interaction. This is a patch now type of moment. You want to make sure you get that done as well. We'll move to our third story. Mozilla, on their end, have released a Firefox browser update to patch 2 zero-day vulnerabilities that were exploited in the Pontoon Vancouver hacking contest last week. The issues were discovered by security researchers Manfred Paul, were chained together to escape the browser sandbox again and execute code on the system, CVE 2024, 2-9 or 9 or 4-3, and 2-9 or 9 or 4-4 are the 2 0-days. The first is the vulnerabilities described as an out-of-bounds access flaw that leads to the bypass of range analysis. The other one is a privileged JavaScript execution issue in event handlers leading to sandbox escape. Those have all been patched by Firefox. I want to make sure you get those devices done. Obviously, the moment a vulnerability is out there, the moment there's a 0-day, there are threat actors out there trying to take advantage of them with live exploits. And so make sure you get these patched right off the bat. Python's had a really, really, really rough few years. This one, though, may actually take the prize. Multiple Python developers, including the maintainers of the popular top.gg Python library, were infected with information-stealing malware after downloading a malicious clone of a highly popular tool, according to Checkmarks. The tool called Colorama, the utility makes an ANSI escape character sequence work on Windows and has more than 150 million monthly downloads. To mount their supply chain attack, the attackers cloned the tool, inserted malicious code, placed a malicious version on a fake mirror domain that relied on typo squatting, to trick developers into mistaking it for the legitimate files.pythonhosted.org mirror. And this goes to the heart of our challenge when we're looking at supply chain code security. Something very, very significant. Software, bill of materials, your SBOMs. That's where that inventory really plays into it. Where are they downloading the libraries from? How are you validating those libraries? Do you know if it's there? Do you know what it would take to rip it out? These are all questions you have to be able to answer as a cybersecurity practitioner and leader. Additionally, the way they spread malware in these packages is they've created malicious repositories under their own accounts. Then they hijack profile accounts, including the GitHub accounts of Editor Syntax, a maintainer of the top.gg search and discovery platform for Discord, has a community of over 170,000 people. Used the editor Syntax account, the attackers contributed a malicious commit to the top.gg Python SDK repository, adding instructions to download the malicious clone of Colorama and started a malicious GitHub repository to increase their visibility. The account was likely hacked via stolen cookies. Again, when we're using single sign-on, we're generating these URLs, these cookies that essentially remember it. And once those are compromised, then people are able to log in. There's no MFA trigger because as long as that cookie makes sense, it's there. So some ways to mitigate that is you've got to get those cookies to expire quickly. I mean, 24 hours max is what I would say would be acceptable based on role. And if you're able to do it by role, which is a tough order to do because typically these types of policies are enforced on the company level. But if you find a way to be able to enforce it at the group level, then you would say groups with the most, with the highest level of access would have to renew it every 4 hours, 5 hours, 8 hours, something along the lines where they understand the need of why we do that to essentially decrease this types of risks now, especially with SSO. We've seen Okta and we've seen so many identity providers become a main target for threat actors. This is the reason for it. And so this becomes critically important to understand, to implement properly, to manage correctly, to evangelize in the business for people to see that, especially with your CTO, especially with your VP of engineering. These are the types of conversations, these types of stories help win them over to understand the need to find a way to enhance security along that software pipeline, which becomes even more critical then. So there's that. Russia continually targets Germany. This time, Cozy Bear is really working their way through the German diplomatic missions. The latest phishing attack was designed to deploy a backdoor malware named Wine Loader, which allows threat actors to gain remote access to compromised devices and network. The group's been linked to many types of attacks, including SolarWinds back in December of 2020. Mania researchers say that APT29 has been conducting a phishing campaign against German political parties since at least February of this year. This marks a significant shift in the group's operational focus. It's the first time they've targeted political parties. The Attackers are now using phishing emails with a lure theme around the Christian Democratic Union, a major political party in Germany and currently the second largest in the federal parliament. The phishing emails seen by Mania pretend to be dinner invitations that embed a link to an external page that drops a zip archive containing the root saw malware dropper. From there, the wine. Then when that's executed, it downloads a backdoor named Wine Loader on the victim computer. It's been previously discovered by Zscaler last month, who saw it deployed in phishing attacks, pretending to be invites to diplomats for a wine tasting event. The Wine Loader backdoor features several similarities with other malware variants deployed in the past by Fancy Bear, including Burn Batter, MySky Beat, and Beat Drop, suggesting there's a common developer and they're kind of evolving kind of the stuff that works and then the stuff that doesn't work. And then in every version and every new version becomes a little bit better. Wine Loader is decrypted using an RC4 and loaded directly into memory via a DLL side loading, abusing a legitimate Windows executable. The Wine Loader sends the victim's username, device name, process name, and other information to a C2 to help profile the system. And that's where Fancy Bear goes into action. So something to keep in mind. Now, Russia's one thing, China, a greater threat. And obviously, Russia had their hands full this weekend with the terror attack that took place in Moscow that killed 150 Russian civilians that were out at a concert. This one specifically is the Chinese government exploiting the Screen Connect and F5 bugs to attack defense and government entities. They're exploiting two popular vulnerabilities. They're attacking U.S. defense contractors, U.K. government entities, and various institutions in Asia. The new report from Google-owned security firm Mania spotlights the work of a threat actor they call UNC5174. The researchers believe it's a former member of a Chinese hacktivist collective that has shown indications of acting as a contractor for China's Ministry of State Security. So they're taking advantage of several CVEs. The first one is the Screen Connect CVE 2024-1709. The other one is CVE 2023-46747, a vulnerability discovered affecting F5 Big IP product. During the exploitation, Mania say they saw a mix of custom tools and frameworks used to take advantage of the issues that were unique to this Chinese threat group. They've also seen them target the U.S., Canada, Southeast Asia, Hong Kong, and the U.K. as part of these attacks, as well as looking at universities and doing aggressive scanning of those vulnerabilities to identify key targets they were looking for. So China continues to be on the move and on the prowl there. A team over at Google built a Google Thread model for post-quantum cryptography, highlighting four different prioritization considerations that practitioners should look at. The feasibility of a quantum attack that is in question, the existence right now of the store now, decrypt later types of attacks, the use cases that require fixed public keys with decades of lifetime, and the need for exploratory research on systems that might require substantial redesign to work with post-quantum algorithms, especially where wider industry collaboration is required. They're talking here about Shor's algorithms, as well as Groover's search. A great little way where they're looking at the key system, asymmetric encryption and key agreement, digital signatures, fancy crypto, and symmetric cryptography. All in all, they kind of go through some of these and the different use cases that are available, a good little read that's available in the show notes for all of y'all there as well. And Senator Mark Warner, a top cybersecurity voice in the United States Senate, is looking to try to establish a minimum cybersecurity standard after the Change Healthcare breach that's affected 1 out of 3 Americans' patient records, as well as crippled the healthcare industry. This proposal comes as United Healthcare, the behemoth and Change Healthcare parent company, has come under increasing scrutiny for its handling of the incident, particularly from Congress. United Health Group CEO Andrew Witty is planning an appearance before the Senate Finance Committee, which counts Warner as a member. Warner also leads the Homeland Security Committee in the Senate. We are prioritizing ensuring patient access to care and medication and restoration of our systems and so forth. They've given their whole thing. But this one is interesting because here's what you got to pay attention to. He wants to standardize, copy this, He wants to standardize basic cybersecurity requirements for vendors. And this is significant because this would establish a bare requirement. This may be the precedent when people say good cybersecurity hygiene. If this bill gets through the Senate, goes through the House, and passes the president's desk, then you would have a law that would set what the basic cybersecurity standards are. Now, as practitioners, there's a few ways to influence this. One, you can write to Senator Warner's office, let the team there know, we believe these should be the minimum cybersecurity standards that should be put in place as part of this legislation. That would be significant. Now, this would apply to healthcare, but it would obviously carry on to other places. Once there's a precedent in federal government, once someone sets a line in the sand, typically everyone will adopt to that line. So this is significant by Senator Mark Warner and something worthwhile to follow. That's it for our show this morning. We'll be back tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern, live right here with all the latest and greatest. Until then, thank you all for tuning in. Have a great week. And most importantly, stay cyber safe.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.